Everyone, and welcome once again to my podcast. My name is Rich Baker, and I call my podcast For the Love of Wrestling. And this week, we have a very special guest. He is a professional wrestler who has worked for the World Wrestling Federation, the American Wrestling Association, and WCW. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Hughes. Mr. Hughes, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here. How's it going?
Everything's going great, Curtis. Everything's going great. And I want to thank you for taking the time to come on the show with us. And why don't you let the fans know what you're up to these days? You're obviously most well-known for your WWF run. Why don't you give the fans a taste of what you're doing these days?
Well, you know, I have a school in Atlanta, Georgia, a wrestling school, WWA4. And, of course, we're on YouTube every week. I mean, you know, you can go online and check out all our shows and all the guys and see how talented they really are. I'm the trainer there at the school, got some talented individuals. And, of course, a couple of my guys are in the WWE at the present moment. Heath Slater, I'm pretty sure everybody heard of him. He's one of my students. And, of course, they picked up another guy, which is called Navy Blue. He's down at FCW at the present moment, getting groomed and ready to go. Hopefully one day to the big dance. And of course, I'm, you know, doing shows on the weekends, mostly all over the country, wrestling and speaking engagements, things like that. But really, my focus is on my school. We got plenty of, you know, got a whole mess of students, you know, full house, everybody's learning, and you know, it's a good thing.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of great reviews about the students that you have trained. What do you think makes the transition of being a in-ring talent to a good trainer? What do you think makes you an esteemed trainer as opposed to someone who doesn't have the talent to translate to his students what he knows in the ring?
Well, you know, that's the important thing is, you know, you have to have the experience. You have to have been on the road. You have to have been in these different major organizations. You know, you'd have to have wrestled a lot of major superstars so you can get the taste of how it really is up in the big time. Because, of course, if you've never been there, you can't teach anybody how to get there, you see. And, of course, I've been in WWF three different times, WCW for a couple of years, AWA started out, my major television career on ESPN. So, you know, so I'm on my 23 years of experience, so I have a lot of knowledge, you know, to give a young individual that's serious about becoming a professional wrestler, teach you pretty much what you need to know to get there.
Right. Speaking of your WWF run, what you're most well-known for is your run with Undertaker in 93. Tell me a little bit about that run. Not everybody gets a run with the Undertaker, let alone being able to say he stole the Undertaker's urn when the Undertaker was the top star in the industry. Tell me a little bit about that run, how it came to be, and how it was working with Taker.
Well, you know, as you know, I was at WCW. I was... went in as Big Cat, you know. I went in as a good guy at first, and then eventually they saw that I'd be better as a heel, and so they turned me heel. And eventually, you know, when I first got to WCW, I started wrestling with Luger. When I was in AWA, we had the same finish, which was a torture rack, which I didn't know at the time, and got a call from one of the guys in the office, Magnum PA, I think he was like one of the agents at the time, and he called me and said that, you know, I'm looking for somebody to work with Luger, and you know, I was excited about that, and had my run with that. Long story short, going fast forward here to the Undertaker deal. Well, before actually WWF hired me, they were looking for somebody to work with the Undertaker that could draw money with him. And, of course, they tried Elegante. I'm pretty sure you're familiar with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I guess it wasn't panning out with him. And so, you know, that's when they decided to make the run with me and the Undertaker. So one day, you know, Vince came to me and said, we're going to, you know, I got some plans for you. We're going to do some big things for you. And I didn't know it was going to be that, you know. And then one day he just said, you're going to go out there and you're going to lay Paul Bearer and Undertaker out and beat him up and take his urn from him. And he's not going to raise up and get it back. And I was really surprised and shocked. I couldn't believe it.
Well, when you WCW, just to backtrack a little bit, you came in as the big cat, Curtis Hughes, and in AWA, where you were the baby face, the smiling baby face. Who transitioned you to the scowling Mr. Hughes with the fedora, the sunglasses, and the shirt and tie? Who takes credit for creating that character?
Well, I take the credit because I'm the one that created it, okay?
Right.
Dusty Rhodes, when I first got there, Ole Anderson, he was the booker. He was the booker at the time when I first got to WCW. And I did my little run as Big Cat. But then after Ole Anderson lost his spot as the booker, Dusty came in as the head booker. So when Dusty got the book, he came to me and said, I got a better gimmick for you. You know, we're going to try to do the bodyguard gimmick like Big Bubba Rogers, okay? So, you know, so I looked at Bubba's, you know, some of his, I was looking at his matches and his character and everything, and I said, well, I can't be exactly the same guy. I got to be a totally different person. Even though it's a bodyguard gimmick, I got to be a totally different person. And I noticed that, you know, when Big Bubba came to the ring, he had the hat, the shades, the tie, the jacket, you know. And so I had to change it up a little bit, so I had to say to myself, well, I have to figure out a way to get these shades to stay on. So that was the unique thing about the character, you know, because if you're a big, bad SOB bodyguard, why do you have to take the shades off if you're going to beat somebody up? And that was the unique thing about it, and so that's what I started doing. I mean, I worked in my clothes and the whole nine yards, and once I figured out how to leave the shades on, that's when it took off.
Right, yeah, that was one of the unique facets of the character was the fact you wrestled in the shades. One of the things I noticed by your work, and you know, I'm glad you brought up Big Bubba Rogers, because I noticed the similarities in working was the way neither of you took, you know, it took a lot to get you off your feet. And I think that created a great basis of the character being tough as nails. You didn't just knock Mr. Hughes down with one punch. Did you develop the character to be able to take a pounding and take a hell of a lot to take you off your feet?
Well, depending on who it was you was in the ring with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to make sure the character got over strong, but still, the people understand what kind of character it was, you know. I mean, think bodyguard, first thing come to mind is a bodyguard is supposed to be a tough SOB, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And so, depending on who you're in the ring with, you know, you still have to cipher out when to bump, how to bump, you know, because a lot of times, you know, they gave me a bunch of enhancement guys, you know, back then they called them jobbers, you know, and they gave you some enhancement guys to get the character over, you know, beat up guys, you might say. And, you know, they usually gave me, you know, two guys at one time, which they call a handicap match, to get me over strong on television, you see? Because eventually they had, you know, put me with Lex Luger as his bodyguard, you see? And so, being that Luger was a big star as well, you know, I had to really look my part and do my part, see? It wouldn't have got over if I was just a weakling and fell every time somebody hit me or punched me or kicked me. You know what I mean?
Sure, so absolutely.
So I had to make sure that gimmick stayed strong. Plus, I was thinking about my future as well. So, you know, I had to basically, you know, say I'm trying to make a living. So, you know, if I don't get this character over, I won't be able to make a living.
Well, one of the things about your work is your agility. And what was the weight you worked at with WCW? Was it in the 350 range?
No, I wasn't quite at 350. I was like, when I came in, I was like 290, I reckon.
Oh, okay.
And then as the years went by, my second year there, I think I got like 320. You know, and training, when I first started training to be a wrestler, my trainer stressed to me how important it is that you bump real good. Excuse me, my God. Forgive me for that. I just came out of nowhere. As I was training, you know, started training, you know, my trainer would say, as a big man, you know, it helps that you bump real good. And high bumps on top of that. And that's what focused in my mind. So when I got started getting taught how to bump and do everything I needed to do, I always focused on taking high bumps. Well, that was the ticket that the promoters liked. A big guy flying around like that, doing drop kicks, doing back drops, doing hip tosses, doing all these big bumps at that weight. And the speed that I had in the ring, people was like amazed with it. So, you know, that was another thing, my athletic background, you know, athlete all my life. So that helped. Matters a lot when I was in that ring.
Not only does your agility help the character Mr. Hughes look more impressive, but when the big man Mr. Hughes starts taking bumps for Lex Luger or the Undertaker, it makes Luger and the Undertaker look that much stronger because he's causing Mr. Hughes to bump when, like you just said, built up with the underneath talent, you didn't bump at all or even leave your feet, so it made everybody look stronger.
Right. Yeah. You know. And. You know, like I said, most of the time, you know, I was in the ring with superstars anyway, you know, from WCW all the way up to WWF, from Bret Hart to Macho Man to, you know, I go on and on and on, you know, and all those guys had to get my hand raised on my way to the Undertaker, you see, and of course at times it got a little rough sometimes because the guys didn't want to do it, but they had to do it because they would have been in breach, of course, so they had to go ahead and do the business, you see?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, speaking of building your character, was there anyone in particular that didn't want to make Mr. Hughes look strong because he thought he shouldn't have to? Was there anyone in particular?
I'm sorry, run that by me again?
I said, was there anybody in particular who had a problem with putting Mr. Hughes over and building him up as opposed to what he should do, which would be better for business, building up Mr. Hughes versus Taker?
Well, like I said, I mean, you know, a couple guys, you know, they kind of balked a little bit, but they eventually went ahead and took care of business, you see? You know, at first, you know, they were like, you know, I don't want to do it, blah, 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 but they knew they'd have to do it because either they do it or get fired, see?
Sure.
So they had no choice, so they ended up doing what they had to do. Now, you know, for example, I mean, on my way to the Undertaker, after I took his urn, you know, we traveled the country and doing house shows, and so, you know, I worked with Bret Hart and Duggan and Macho Man and, you know, all these other superstars, and, of course, like I said, they had to get my hand raised, but, you know, Bret was really, like, had a hard time with it, you know. But eventually went ahead and did it, you see. And but everybody else is pretty simple, you know.
Well, as far as your WWF tenure goes, after you worked with Taker, after you left the WWF, you went to ECW for about, what, 2.5-3 years. How was it working with Paul Heyman? I know Paul, and I talked to a lot of people about working for Paul. How did you find working with Paul?
Oh man, he's a great guy, man. Love him to death, man. I mean, a brain for business, you know. I mean, that's why I don't understand why he's just sitting at home. He should be somewhere in somebody's company, helping the company. You see, he's brilliant at this game. And I've been on Paul since, you know, my WCW days. And we always, you know, always had a good rapport with each other. Never had a disagreement about anything. I mean, he helped me along the way, and you know, told me some things that helped me in the business. And one day, you know, I got a call from him. One day, I wasn't doing anything. I think I had just got back from Japan, and you know, he called me up and said he was thinking about putting this company together. He was going to call it Extreme Championship Wrestling, and he wanted me to be one of his stars, one of his main stars, and I believe I was the first one that he called about it, and I said, yeah, I'll do it. And so once he got the ball rolling, you know, flew me up to Philly and told me what he wanted to do, wanted to keep the same gimmick, just change the name to the Roughneck, and, you know, and gave me a push, you know. And I can say I don't have anything bad to say about Paulie, man. He's a hell of a guy, man. I enjoyed working for him, took care of me, him and his partner, Todd Gordon, a good man. And, you know, I really enjoyed working for him. I just hate to see he's on the sidelines right now. I wish he was still in the game, you know what I mean? Because I think he's going to bring a lot to this business, you see?
Sure. And one of the things, I mean, not to digress from our conversation, but anyone who's ever had the privilege of talking business with Paul Heyman, they'll come away from the conversation shaking their head, because there doesn't seem to be an idea that the man doesn't grasp as far as art business, MMA. He's just really a tremendous guy to just sit down and pick his brain.
Oh, yeah, man. I'll tell you what, I mean, I used to enjoy just being around him, you know, talking with him. I mean, the guy is just brilliant. I mean, he's like another Vince McMahon when it comes to the wrestling business, you see? And, you know, I hate to see that, you know, ECW went under, had all the problems, you know, because I think that company would have kept flourishing if they would have did some smart things, but that's besides the point. You know, it's not around anymore, but, you know, the time that it was around, it's a hell of a company. You know,
sure.
I enjoyed working there, and, you know, he let you do what you need to do to get the character over, also, too, to get the company over, and, you know, to make the company look like what it was. But, you know, even though you know Extreme Championship Wrestling, and it was pretty wild, they did no holds barred type of things, and you know, I wasn't into that kind of stuff with the bleeping and all that crazy stuff, you know. So, you know, when it came to the time where, you know, he wanted me to do certain things, you know, I just couldn't do it, you know.
Right. And then after ECW, you returned to the WWF, and you were put as a bodyguard for Triple H.
Right.
Now, Triple H wasn't Triple H back then. He was Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and how was that working with him? He obviously wasn't the megastar he is now. Could you see greatness in him as early as 97? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man. I told him that, too. One time we was in Atlanta, Georgia. I guess they were, this one is in WCW. This is before I even, you know, was hooked up with him as his bodyguard. I was just, like, on the indie scene, and he was in WCW, and, you know, we were at the hotel bar there, and, you know, and a few of the guys came in, and, you know, where we used to hang out at the airport, their hotel at the airport, and they all came in, and I happened to see him over there, and, you know, I went over to him, and I was like, you know, man, I just want to tell you, you know, you're a great worker, man, you know, and I saw great things happening for him in the future, you see, but long story short, I didn't know I'd be end up with him, you know, but then once I ended up with him, you know, it was a pleasure, you see, because, you know, here I was with this other superstar. Each time I went in there, I was with superstars, you know. I mean, I was always on top, and when Vince told me I was going to be with him, I was like, great, you know. I was excited, you know. And so, you know, just from talking to him, man, I knew he was going to be a great performer. He was already a good worker, and it was just a matter of time before he got a belt, you see.
Sure. And, of course, I guess, how did China come into the picture? I know they were pushing for her to come in. Did you have any inkling that he was going to turn to China as a female bodyguard?
No, I didn't. Mm-hmm. What happened was, like I said, I was with him, and then, you know, I had some medical issues when I was in New York at Madison Square Garden, and I had to take some time off. And so I guess with the time off, they needed someone to take that position. And, of course, I guess being that she was looked the way she looked, you know, it would probably get over. And so that's when they put her in that spot. And, you know, it eventually, you know, gave me my release, you see. But, no, I didn't have anything to do with that. I mean, you know, that's just how the business is. You know, as long as you're healthy, you can play in the game. But once you lose your spot, then, you know, someone else gets it. You see?
Right, sure. And then back in 99, you came back to be a bodyguard for Chris Jericho. And I don't know if you're aware of this. I'm in the middle of reading Jericho's new book. And he didn't seem to want a bodyguard at the time. He wanted his character to be a little more serious. But he said that Vince Russo wanted to keep him as his comedic character that he was in WCW. How did you like working with Jericho? Did you feel the same way, that he didn't need a bodyguard? Or how did you feel about that?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, when you get hired, you know, when you get hired at a company, you know, it don't matter where you're at, as long as you got a job.
Right.
And so I was just happy to be back. I was happy to be employed, you know, whatever, you know, because we're all independent contractors. So once you sign that contract, you know, the company decides what they want to do with you, and that's what they decided to do with me. I didn't have no problem with that. Maybe he didn't, you know, want it like that, but that's just how it was. And you know, we did what we did for that time, and I enjoyed it at the moment. And, you know, everything was a learning experience. And, you know, I can say that, yes, I had the opportunity to work with him, and a lot of people can't say that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look at the talent that you've worked with as far as not only as a in-ring talent, but the bodyguard. I mean, Hunter, Chris Jericho, and in ECW, you were the bodyguard of, weren't you the bodyguard of Shane Douglas? Who did you like working with as the enforcer bodyguard gimmick, either in WCW or ECW or what have you? Who did you like working with the best?
Let's see. I enjoyed working with Curt Hennig a lot because he was really easy. He was one of the guys I enjoyed working with. I enjoyed working with Bret Hart. I enjoyed working with Owen Hart. I enjoyed working with, I was talking in WWF. I enjoyed working with Kamala, Undertaker, of course, and, Macho Man, I enjoyed working with him as well, and then WCW, of course, there's this variety of people, you know. I enjoyed working with Bobby Eaton in WCW, and Brad Armstrong. I loved working with him. I mean, he was just a dream to work with.
Sure.
And of course, in ECW, you know, it's just up there, it was just guys just doing whatever, you know.
So, right.
You know. So it wasn't no favorites up there.
Yes, exactly. Now, looking back at your career, and I was doing a little research for the interview, you worked for Bern Gagne, you worked for Vince McMahon, you worked for Paulie Dangerson, you said Ole was the booker in WCW. You're not going to ever find that again in the history, in the industry now, because there's no more regional territories or anything. There's one game in town. How did you find working with all four? What was the biggest difference between Vince McMahon, the most successful, and maybe Gagne or Paul Lee?
Well, Gagne, you know, he was my first major employer in the wrestling business. He loved me, and, you know, he loved athletes, and when I first got there, you know, he told me, you know, you're a great athlete, and big things are going to happen for you, and just keep your head focused, and you know, learn and so forth and so on. Of course, then when I got to WCW, Ole, you know, he loved athletes, and he liked, you know, good workers, and he told me that was that, and he was going to give me a push. And of course, going up to WWF, you know, Vince, same way. I mean, he loved what I did in the ring. He loved my character. He loved my athleticism and my athletic ability. He loved the way I worked. He liked just a variety of things that he liked about me. And I guess that's why he hired me three different times. You know what I'm saying?
Right, sure.
And each time I say to people that ask me what I feel about Vince McMahon, do I have anything to say about him, and I tell them. You know, because a lot of people, a lot of the workers that work for him, some of them don't have nice things to say about the man. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I don't have anything bad to say about him because he was good to me. I can remember the time when we were in the dressing room one day and we were going to have a six-man. It was me and Million Dollar Man and IRS, losing the Six Man, we're going to take on the Nasty Boys and Kamala. And Vince said, you guys come up with a finish and let me know what it is before you go out there. So we sit down and they came up with a finish and, you know, they said, well, we're going to take it on me, you know, they're going to pin me. And so they went to Vince with that information and they told him, and Vince said, oh, no, you're not on Curtis because I have plans for him. You guys going to have to take it on Kamala. And ever since that point, I was like, you know, this guy really likes me as far as my talent goes, you see. And every time I went back there, he always treated me well. And they always had a good spot in the company. It just always something came up, you know, where I didn't belong in there, even if it was injury or something, you know. But I wish I had a better run there, you know. But you know what, though? It's all good because... like I said, I have two of my students working for them, so that'll tell you something.
Sure. One of the things about Vince McMahon that I worked for him from 92 to 99, and obviously I wasn't a talent, but one of the things I found when speaking to him about wrestlers and talent, he had to become a fan of your character before you get any type of push. So obviously he was a fan of the Mr. Hughes character, and that's saying something, like you said.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt. No doubt about it. You know, because like I said, when I got there, I mean, right off the bat, you know, he already had big plans for me. And, you know, and like I said, Undertaker was the top dog at the time. And everybody was in line to wrestle the top dog. And, you know, you wrestle the top dog, you make more money. And here I was, a young guy coming in. And, of course, the veterans are like, you know, what's up with this pitcher? You see, I get to get blessed to have the opportunity to work with the top star in the company. And I tell you, it was. I think I had to pinch myself a couple of times because I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that makes you, quote unquote, a legend in this industry as it is now is the fact you have an action figure now, Mr. Hughes action figure. And for those collectors out there, where can they find a Mr. Hughes action figure?
Well, you can go to, of course, my Facebook, or you can go to WWA4.com and leave a message, email, whatever. And, you know, I sell them for $20. I'll sign it, you know, sign the cover for you. And it looks just like me. And, you know, you go to WWA4, and we have PayPal, of course. And, you know, you send the $20 and leave the address and all that good stuff, and I'll get one right to you.
Great. And the same goes for anybody looking to be trained by one of the best trainers in the business. Go to that same website, WWA4, and they can inquire about being trained by Mr. Hughes in that website, I assume?
You're right. Yeah, same website. And, of course, you know, it's real reasonable. I'm the only one that's in there with you in the ring. I show you everything you need to know. I teach you how to wrestle. If you go on to YouTube and type in WWA4, you will see all the shows that we do. We do shows every Wednesday night at the school. All the guys do the shows there that have been trained. They're all talented individuals. We don't let guys wrestle that hadn't been trained properly. And you can see the talent that we produce. Like I said, Heath Slater is one of my students. He's on SmackDown now, doing his thing. And, of course, they just picked up another one of my guys. It's Navy Blue. He's down at FCW now. They call him something else now. I forgot what they call him now. And then, of course, you know, we got a couple guys that's going to be eventually going down there, A.R. Fox and a guy by the name of Nation. And those guys, you can see them as well on YouTube at WWA4. And you can check out all our talent. If you're in town or Atlanta, Georgia, you can always come to the WWA4 arena. The shows are free. And you go online to the WWA4 website, and they'll tell you exactly where the school is. That's where we do the shows at.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, Curtis, I want to thank you for taking the time for being on the show. I'm sure my listeners are going to enjoy hearing this interview, and I want to thank you again. It was a real pleasure for me to talk. I'm a big fan of the Mr. Hughes character, and I'm certainly glad that you're doing well training, and hope nothing but the best for you.
Appreciate it, man. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to finish up the show, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, that was Mr. Hughes, Curtis Hughes, who has worked for the AWA, WCW, the WWF, ECW, and really a memorable character in the world of professional wrestling. And I want to thank you, the fans, for taking the time to listen. I hope you enjoyed this interview, and the ones coming up are going to be great, too. So I'm going to sign off like I do every week. This is Rich Baker, and for those of you who believe, no explanation is necessary, and for those of you who don't, no explanation will do. And if you have any questions or any comments, you can comment on the website or come to my Facebook page, richbaker123 at Facebook, or my email address is richbaker123@aol.com. And this is Rich Baker for The Love of Wrestling, and I'll speak to you next week.